One of the things that we love to do here at Hoboken Grace is give you the chance to be able to hear the stories of the people who are sitting next to you. Because, as I said earlier, I don't think this is a religion. It's not just an idea that we buy into. It's someone that we get to experience. And we want for you to be able to hear the stories of how God's impacting the people right beside you, because I think God wants to work and to move in your life as well. If I haven't had the chance to meet you yet, my name is Chris. I'm the lead pastor here at Hoboken Grace. And for the past couple weeks, we've been in the midst of a really interesting series, a really interesting conversation called The Divided States of America. And we've been looking at a fundamental and working through a fundamental question. And that question is this: what does love look like? What does love look like in a culture of division? In a culture where the divides seem to be growing, in a culture where rather than things coming together, it seems to be tearing apart. But what does love look like? And we've been focusing in on a few things in particular that are extremely countercultural, specifically the aspects that God has taught us about love that are incredibly countercultural. And so we began a couple weeks ago and we talked about this reality that God says love listens. It's slow to speak and it's quick to listen, and love cares. It cares deeply about understanding. Not just being heard, but understanding the people around you. And then we built on that and we looked at this powerful truth in week two, that love doesn't place its hope in the power systems of man, but love places its hope in love embodied, Jesus Christ, and what Jesus can do in us and through us and changed hearts. And then last week we looked at this powerful truth that love doesn't lead with its mouth, love leads with its hands. That love doesn't just talk, but it does something. It moves, it acts, it does something. And then this week, as we come together, what I want to do is I want to be able to bring us to one final principle. And this week, as we bring this series to a close, I want to take you to one final principle that I think changes, it fundamentally changes the way that we engage the entire political system inside of our culture. In order to do that, what I want to do is I want to take you to one of the most famous passages in all of the scripture on love. As a matter of fact, if you've ever been to a wedding, you've probably heard it. It's incredibly popular because it's incredibly powerful. And in this moment, Paul is writing to the church at Corinth, and he's trying to help them to understand love. And for those of you who don't know who Paul is, Paul at the beginning of the church was actually the greatest opponent to the church. There was no one who was more feared in the church than Paul, because he was doing everything that he could to destroy the church. But then Jesus stepped into his life and changed everything for him, and he began to take the message of Jesus throughout the entire Roman Empire. And as he's doing that, God uses Paul to write this letter to the church at Corinth. And one of the things that's extremely important to the early church is to understand love. Why was it so important? Because Jesus said to his disciples, you have one command. What's that one command? Love each other the way that I have loved you. So it's incredibly important for you to understand what love looks like. And so Paul's writing to the church in Corinth, and he's trying to help them understand what love looks like, and he says love is patient, love is kind. And the reality is, we could talk about how, again, as I said in week one, we could spend an entire year on this, and we could talk about how all of these impact the way that we engage politics, the way that we talk about politics, the conversations that we have with one another, because we're not always that patient. And then it continues, and love is kind, and but we don't exactly nail that one. And it does not envy. It does not boast. It's not proud. It's not rude. There's some pretty big implications on that in terms of the way we operate politically. It's not self-seeking. It's not easily angered. We talked about in week one how listening impacts that. It keeps no record of wrongs. And then it continues. It says, love does not delight in evil. And this is the one where I want for us to really sit today. It says, love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. Now, we could go back. We could talk about every single one of these. But this is the one that I want for us to focus in on. Because God steps into our life. He says, you have to understand, love is passionate about it. It rejoices with it. It holds to the truth. Now, for those of you who are kind of exploring this Jesus thing, you need to understand that we have a very interesting idea of truth. We don't think that truth is like out there and it's vague. We don't think that truth is undefined. We don't think that truth changes over time. We don't think that truth evolves. We actually believe that truth is incredibly defined and that it was defined in a person. And that Jesus, the reason that Jesus came was not just to bring us back to himself, but he came for us to know. He came for us to know what love was. He came for us to know what truth was. And so when you look at those who are closest to Jesus, as they're writing to the church, they're trying to help them understand. They're like, no, truth is not vague. It's not undefined. It's been defined, and it was defined by Jesus. And Jesus says, I want you to know what's true. I want you to know the truth, and I want for you to see that. I want you to know the truth about love. I want for you to see love embodied, lived, demonstrated. When John is writing about Jesus, he talks about this, how Jesus was he embodied truth. And for those of you who don't know, John was basically Jesus' best friend. He's the disciple that was closest to Jesus. And as he writes about Jesus, listen to what he says. He says, the Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us. The Word, he's talking about Jesus. He says, the Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us. We have seen his glory, the glory of the one and only who came from the Father, full of what? Full of grace and truth. He says, no, he's full of truth. He came for us to know truth. Jesus talks about this in himself. And listen to what he says about himself. He says, I'm the way and the truth and the life. He says, no, I'm here to embody. I want for you to know truth. I want you to know what it is. I want for you to not just see me live it. I want for you to live it. And as Paul's writing to the church, he says, you have to understand. You have to understand, love is passionate about, love holds to, love celebrates, love holds to truth. It's incredibly concerned with truth. Holds to truth. And you say, well, how does that impact politics? Are you saying that we need to care about what's true in politics? That's good, but I think there's something more to it than that. I think this impacts the way that we engage the political system in a deeper way. It's something more fundamental than just caring about what's true. That's important, but there's something more to it. It has to do with what it is that you rejoice in. What is it that you celebrate? What is it that you actually hold to in the way that we engage our system? And we live in a very strange system. Are you aware of this? Like we live in a very unique and strange system. Now, sometimes when you grow up in something and it's all you've ever known, you just think that it's all there is, and you take it for granted, and you think, well, everybody has kind of been in this, and it's not true. Like for example, a couple years ago, my boys and I, we were at my grandmother's house, and she has a rotary phone on her wall, and it started to ring, and my son looked at it, and he's like, "What is that? And why won't it stop ringing?" I said, "It's a phone." He said, "No, it's not." And he wouldn't believe me. Like, he wouldn't believe me that a phone would have a cord for one thing, and what the thing that goes around, like, he wouldn't believe. He's like, why would you have a cord on a phone? This doesn't make any sense. Does it power it? And I'm like, no, it doesn't power it. But all he'd ever seen is cell phone. He had no concept of this. And sometimes when you live in the midst of something, you just think, well, that's just the way it is, and it's always been that way, and you interpret history based on your experience. And I think sometimes we do that and we don't realize how unique our system is. So we struggle with, okay, how do I engage the political system? You realize that almost no one who's ever lived has had to worry about how they influenced the people who govern them, because the people who govern them didn't care about them or their influence. It's a very strange system that we live in, where we actually have a say. You don't have a lot of say; you got a little say, but there is a little say. And it's a strange system, and we have to figure out how to navigate this, and it's very unique. Even when you look at the people who are alive today, it's very unique. It's very unique. And we have to figure out, well, how do we engage this system? And the way that our system works is, well, you get a little bit of say, but if you want to have more say and you want to have more influence, well, you can work for that, and you can try to work your way up in that way. And the way that you do that is that you get other people to like you, and you get other people to agree with you about what needs to happen, and you get them to vote for you, and you get them to be loyal to you, and you get them to buy into what it is that you're doing. And if you can get enough people to do that, then you can increase your influence and you get a little bit more say. And then you can try to accomplish what it is that you think needs to happen, or what it is that collectively you think needs to happen. It's a very unique system. And all of it, if you're going to get to the point where you actually have a lot of say and you can accomplish things and you can achieve things, if you're going to get there, then you have to get people to be loyal to you, and you have to get people to agree with you, and you have to get people to hold to you. The entire system is designed to get you to hold to a person, or to hold to a politician, or to hold to a party. After one of the services earlier, I was talking about this, and someone said to me, well, I don't hold to a politician. I said, okay, but do you hold to a party? Because the whole thing is trying to get you to hold to be loyal to that politician or that party. It's a very unique system. But here's the thing. Love doesn't hold to a politician. Love holds to truth. Now listen, because this is a little bit complicated, but we have to. You need to think through this, right? Love doesn't hold to a politician. Love holds the truth. He says, "No, you have to understand this about love. Love is passionate about it. Celebrates. It holds to truth." There are three pieces to this puzzle. The first one is truth. The second one, go ahead and bring up that side. The first one is truth. The second one is policy. The last one is politician. And God, as he steps in our lives, so frequently he steps in and says, listen, this is the way the world does it, but it's going to be different with you. And so God steps in and he says, you have to understand something. Love holds to truth. And I think we have to think through this if we're going to engage the system well. And I think that we have a responsibility to engage the system well. I talked about this in week two, where I kept saying, listen, I'm not telling you not to engage the system. I actually think we have a responsibility to engage the system. I think that God calls us to steward everything that he gives us, including influence. And I think we have a responsibility to work through, okay, how do we steward that? How are we be good stewards of that influence? We have to figure out how we engage the system. But it's for us, we hold to, love holds to truth. Which means if we're going to hold the truth, then more than anything else, we have to be passionate about learning the truth. Okay, who is Jesus, and what has he taught us about what's actually true? And what are the principles that he's taught us about what love looks like and how it works and how it interacts with the world around us? And as you read through the letters that are written to the church in the New Testament, they're constantly trying to help them to understand the truth. Like, you think love looks like this, but it doesn't actually look like that. It looks like this. And if we're going to, if love holds to truth, we've got to be passionate about, okay, what does that look like? And God says, you have to understand these things that are true. And love doesn't just care about people who are like them. Love cares about people who are different than them. And love cares about not just people who like you, but love cares about its enemies. And God steps into our life and says, you have to be passionate about what's true. And God says, you have to understand that love cares for people, not just cares for people who have what you have, but cares for people who don't have what you have. And he teaches us all sorts of things about generosity and the importance of generosity. And this is all truth. And if love holds to truth, then we're passionate. We're incredibly passionate about, okay, what's true, what's true, what's true, what's true, what's true. And then we have to then look at that, understanding the truth. Then we have to do the hard work of figuring out, okay, how does that then impact policy? How does that then impact the way that we should operate as a culture? How does that impact the laws that we should have in place and the way that we should govern one another? How does this truth that we're so passionate about, how does it impact this? And that's hard work. That's hard work. If you think that the answer is simple here, you're not being honest about truth. It's complicated. It's incredibly complicated because there are all sorts of principles and truths that impact policy. It's incredibly complicated, but it's important. It's important that we do the hard work of figuring it out, which means that you're going to have to take time to actually think through it. And that's something that we've just stopped doing. We don't think anymore. We've forgotten how to actually think through something, because I talked about this a little bit in my blog this past week on our website, but we live in a culture where we just take in and we 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 take in. We never actually stop to think through what we're taking in. We're just constantly taking in these phones that we have with us. We're just constantly taking in, taking in, taking in. Some of you take your phone with you to the restroom. Like, you don't even pause to think while you're on the toilet. You're still taking in. Taking in, taking in. There's something coming out, but you're just taking in. Taking in. That was probably inappropriate. I didn't say that in the first two services, but this is the third service, man. We get to have fun. So, but you take it. We do. We take it, and we've forgotten how to think through. And we create no space for it. We create no time for it. And that's incredibly dangerous, because when you're just constantly taking in and you're not thinking through, all you end up doing is just regurgitating what it is that you've been told. Which is what most of our political conversation is today. But we've never actually stopped to think through, like, no, what's the truth here? And there's multiple truths at play. It's not simple. It's complicated. And then beyond that, then you have to do the complicated work of figuring out, well, then who is it that I vote for? And the complicated work of, okay, which politician? And some of you are like, no, my politician aligns with truth. No, they don't. Which means you're going to have to do the hard work. And it's hard work. But if we're going to steward our influence, we have to do the work of figuring that out. And we have to ask ourselves, okay, where is it that we start, and what is it that we hold to? Because here's the thing. Remember what I said about our system. We live in an interesting system, and the entire system is trying to get you to hold not to this, but to hold to this. The entire system is designed to get you to hold to a politician or a party, and you're loyal and you hold to that. But listen, this is why this is really important. This is really important. Wherever you start will determine where you compromise. Wherever you start will determine where you compromise. And so if you start here, you realize, man, I'm going to have to compromise here because and it's getting where there's less and less, and the decisions are harder and harder, and you're going to have to compromise here. But if you flip it and you start here, you know where you end up compromising? Here. And people do it all the time. And I hear people do it, and all of us are tempted to do it, to compromise on the truth to support what we hold to. Wherever you start will determine where you compromise. What do you, hold to? See, if you start here, I hold, then you'll find policies to support it, and then you'll find truths, and you'll twist truths to support it. It's amazing how many times we care very little about truth and making sure that we can support or promote. But God says that's not us. No, it's not. No, love holds the truth, starts here. Which means that you have to do the hard work of figuring this out. But if you start here, you understand. And if you do the hard work, like, I don't know how this, then the reality is, as we work through this, it should lead to empathy and compassion when you get to this point. Why? Because you realize, like, it's hard. And I understand, like, you made a different choice than I made when it comes to these things. But it's hard. It's complicated. And people will say to me, I don't understand what's going on in the church because they don't all vote the same. Well, then you're starting at the wrong place because we're not unified here. We're unified here around Jesus. And there should be unity here, and there should be empathy and compassion here. Why? Because it's hard. Like, it's complicated. Let me ask you, what is it that you hold to? What is it that you're unified around? Are you comfortable in the conversation because there's unity here, because there's unity here? Do you have the conversation here or here? What is it that you're most passionate about? One of the really interesting things with Jesus, as you read through Jesus' life, what you're going to find is that whenever the religious leaders are coming to trick him, they always want to get him involved in this. They're constantly trying to get him involved in this. Why? Because you can make an enemy out of anybody if you get them involved in this. Because it's complicated, it's complex. And so there is no solid answer as you get into this, which is why Jesus is always like, nope, nope, nope. And he constantly comes back to truth. Why? Why? Because this is what we have unity around. And this is what love holds to. And so he's constantly calling them back to that. People come and talk to me quite frequently, and they're like, I want you to speak on this, or I want you to speak on this, I want you to talk about this, but I think that God's called me as a pastor to talk about this, and that we have a responsibility to steward our influence and to figure this out and to work through it. But this is what we hold to. What is it? What is it that you hold to? What is it? Let me ask it a different way. What is it that you're most passionate about? That you fight for, that you're most passionate about? Our passions are interesting because they betray us. They allow us to see parts of ourselves that maybe we aren't even aware of ourselves, which is why I always tell newly married couples, like, pay attention to when your spouse gets really upset, because it's an incredible opportunity. It's a great opportunity for you to actually get to know who they are and what makes them tick, because oftentimes, especially if the emotional response, it's not actually proportionate to the situation that they're in, well, there's something there. And you can learn there's like core family values that are there and things like that that show up in the midst of those situations. Like for Anna and I, when we first got married, it was interesting because I came from a ridiculous like German Dutch family where you leave your family when you're 10 years old and you got to make it on your own, man, and you go. And then my wife came from an Ecuadorian family where you just never leave your family. Like all of you live together all the time. And and we came in and there were all of these things. And you get super passionate about something. You're like, why are you so passionate about that? Why? Because it reveals something about what you actually hold to. It reveals something about what you actually care about. Not like what you say you care about, but what you actually care about. And when you look at your life, what is it that you actually care about? What is it that you're actually passionate about? If the people around you were to describe you, what would they say you're actually passionate about? I remember one time early on, and some of you have heard me talk about how I love to argue, and I do. I love to argue. It's wonderful. To me, it relieves stress. It's a calming thing. I love debate growing up. Some of you are like, you're insane, unless you're here and you're like me. And you're like, it is. It's just so calming. And it's not calming for the person you're arguing with, but it's calming for you. And I remember early on, Anna and I were in the midst of a conversation. And as we're in the midst of it, she looked at me and she said, "Chris, I'm done." And I said, What do you mean? And we're having fun here. What do you mean? And she says, You don't even care who wins. Like you just wanna argue." And I thought about it for a second. And I was like, "Yeah, I did. I didn't care at all. I just wanted to." And that's how I grew up. But I remember a couple of years into the church plant, I was sitting with someone and we were having, it was a ridiculous conversation. It was some meaningless sports conversation that again, I didn't really care about at all, but I loved to argue. And so we're going back and forth about this. And I'll never forget, I can remember exactly where I was. I remember exactly what restaurant it was. I can still see it today. It was probably 10 years ago. And we're in the midst of this, we're going back and forth, and he looked at me. He just stopped, and he looked at me, and he said, "Chris, I've never seen you this passionate about anything before." I almost started crying. It hit me like a punch to the gut. I was so convicted. And I remember walking out of that restaurant and I said to myself, what am I telling the world around me by what I'm passionate about? I said to myself, I will never again be as passionate about anything that I talk about than the way that I talk about Jesus. For most of us, intellectually, we'd say, no, I start here. Really? What are you most passionate about? We have a responsibility to do the hard work and steward our influence. But we give to Caesar what is Caesar's. And we give to God what is God's. And He gets our hope. And He gets our passion. And we start here. We give to Him what is His. And what we hold to what we hold to more than anything else is Him. The band's going to come back up. And as they do, they're going to walk us back through that song that we sang right before I came on stage. Because if you're holding to anything, policy, politician, anything in your life more than you're holding to Him, you're holding to something inferior. You're holding on to something that's lacking. And I want to invite you today to change where it is that you start. And to come before Him as we walk through this next song and say, no, 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 no. Let all else fade away. I hold to one thing. My hope is found in one place. And what I'm most passionate about and where my allegiance lies is the one who's shown us truth, the one who embodied love. Father, it's so remarkably complicated to figure out how that works out. But there's one thing that we have no hesitation in. There's one thing that we know for sure. And that is that we hold to, we start with, we follow You. Let all else fade away. There's nothing else that will get our hope. There's nothing else that will get our allegiance. There's nothing else that will get our passion than You. In Jesus' name, amen.